Last Sunday morning, we studied a lesson entitled, Workers Are Few. And in that study, we came to the conclusion that no matter who we are, we cannot afford to sit back and do nothing as the servants of the Lord in the church. We observed the words to that old song that we sometimes sing, there is much to do, there's work on every hand. Hark, the cry for help comes ringing through the land. Jesus calls for reapers, I must active be. What wilt thou, O Master? Here am I, send me. If you were not here last Sunday morning, I would encourage you to get a copy of that sermon on tape or CD, or you can listen to it on our website. Because this morning we're going to continue along that same line with a lesson that has to do with some very important work that you and I have to do as God's people. Our lesson this morning is entitled, Seeking the Lost, Tools to Rescue the Perishing. We're going to look at three tools in this study this morning. Tools that you and I must have, we must have them both individually and collectively as a church, if we are going to be effective at reaching the lost with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, these three that we're going to observe this morning are not the only three by any means, but they are three things that we absolutely cannot do without. But before we look at those three tools, I'd like to challenge you with, by way of introduction, three very important questions that I hope will help to lay the groundwork for our look at those three tools. Question number one, as we contemplate seeking the lost, rescuing the perishing, just who are the lost anyway? Why do we refer to them by that name? Who are the lost and why do we call them the lost? Jesus referred to certain people as lost when he stated in Luke chapter 19 verse 10, for the Son of Man is come to seek and save that which is lost. The Apostle Paul, in writing to the church at Corinth in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 verse 3, made reference to some who were lost. And he said, it's because the God of this world has blinded their eyes to the gospel. In other words, those who have not heard and believed and obeyed the gospel are lost. To put it simply, those who are lost are those who are outside of Christ. For Jesus said himself in John 14 verse 6, I'm the way and the truth and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but by me. So those are the folks who are lost, but who are they? What kind of people are they? Well, let me suggest to you first of all that they may be ordinary people. They may be weird people. We sometimes tend to put people in categories, and we look at some people as ordinary, and we look at some people as a little bit strange, and those strange people are not the kind of folks that we like to stay with all the time. In fact, we sort of avoid them every now and then if we have an opportunity. But let me tell you something, folks. It doesn't matter what kind of personality a person has. It doesn't matter whether we like to be around them or whether we don't like to be around them. If they have never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, they're lost, and they need to be reached with the gospel. Secondly, I would suggest to you that there may be good people, there may be bad people. Good in the sense of morally good. People who would be described as the good guy down the road, or maybe we might even describe someone as that sorry old rascal who lives over the hill. People who would volunteer for community service, be the ones that you could count on and always expect to see helping other people and doing good for everybody around them. And at the same time, lost people can also be those folks who are in prison for murder. You see, it doesn't really matter what all they may have done in their past. It doesn't really matter what kind of life they're living right now. If they've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, they are lost and they need to be reached. If you notice that we sometimes let things like this influence our efforts, we are sometimes more likely to be found trying to teach those who are the most like us, trying to reach those who are the closest to our own status or economic bracket. Everybody needs the gospel of Jesus Christ. We could say that people we like, people we don't like, are lost. The people that are good friends, or maybe people who've done something or said something to us in the past, we don't have any use for. Again, those type things cannot enter into the matter of whether or not we make efforts to include those people as ones that we try to reach with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because, you see, the bottom line is, and you can't hardly see the bottom line there, I guess, people outside of Christ are the ones who are lost. Question number two. Why should we seek them? Why should we seek the lost? Why should we try to rescue the perishing? There is, of course, more than one good reason to rescue perishing souls, but I've also noticed that there may be some bad reasons why some people get involved in efforts to reach the lost. You know, that may seem a little bit hard to understand at first, but when you think about it, there can always be the wrong reasons for doing the right things. And sometimes I'm afraid people use the wrong motivation, even in doing something so good and noble as trying to reach the lost with the gospel. You could say that some people try to reach the lost because to them it's just a numbers game. It's as though they view it as a contest, and whoever has the highest score at the end of life wins. I've heard people brag about how many folks they've taught, or how many Bible studies they've conducted, or how many people have obeyed the gospel as a result of it. I remember years ago it was a pretty common practice in the Gospel Advocate and maybe some other brotherhood newspapers that for preachers would go and preach a meeting somewhere, and they would write into the Gospel Advocate and give a report on how many people had responded to the Lord's invitation in that gospel meeting. And you know, that started out as being a pretty good thing just to keep folks informed. But then with some, it got to appear that it was like a contest, you know, to see who could tell the biggest story at the end of a campaign or an effort. If it's just a numbers game, that's the wrong reason. And if our sole reason and motivation for trying to reach the lost in this community, for example, is just purely the effort of trying to put as many people inside this church building as we possibly can so we can sit back and talk about how big we are, that's the wrong reason. If it's just a numbers game. But then I'm afraid there are some people who see it as nothing more than simply a challenge. And some people dearly love a challenge. It is very challenging to rescue perishing souls with the gospel of Christ, because the work is hard and often it's thankless and often it doesn't even have visible results. But there are some people who seem to treat it, and they seem to look at it with an arrogant way of seeing a challenge that needs to be met, just as though they are to try to prove something. And with a cold, robotic methodology, about as far as you could get from what Paul described in Ephesians 4, verse 15, where he talked about speaking the truth in love. If reaching lost souls to us is just another one of those challenges out there for the church to meet, that's the wrong reason. Some go about trying to reach the lost motivated by nothing more than the fear that if they don't do something, they'll be lost themselves. You know, I think that's true. If we don't do anything, we'll be lost ourselves. According to what we learned last Sunday morning with that man who lost everything because he did nothing, the one talent man in the parable Jesus taught in Matthew 25, we need to be impressed with the fact that we've got to be doing something. We've got to be reaching the lost. But if fear is the only motivation we have, then our efforts are not going to be rewarded with the kind of success that they would see if we were truly motivated by the love for lost souls and the desire to bring them to the fold of safety. So there are some wrong reasons for doing such a good thing. Question number three. What if we don't? What if we don't reach them? What if we don't even make an effort? What if we don't reach them? They will be lost. The lost state that they're in right now will be carried on through into eternity where there's no turning back, where there is no changing, where it'll be too late. If we don't reach them, they will be lost. But let's think about that question for just a minute from the standpoint of what about us if we don't reach the lost? I want to share this little parable with you that I've borrowed from an article in the publication called Church Growth America, and it was written back in 1978 by a man named John Drescher. He writes, "It came to pass that a group existed who called themselves fishers. And lo, there were many fish in the waters all around. In fact, the whole area was surrounded by lakes and streams filled with fish, and the fish were hungry. Week after week, month after month, year after year, these who called themselves fishers met in meetings, and they talked about their call to fish, the abundance of fish, and how they might go about fishing. Continually, they searched for new and better methods of fishing. These fishers built large, beautiful buildings called fishing headquarters. The plea was that everyone should be a fisher and every fisher should fish. In addition to meeting regularly, they sent out fishers to other places where there were many fish. They promoted the idea of fishing in faraway streams and lakes where many fish of different colors lived. Large, elaborate, and expensive training centers were built whose original and primary purpose was to teach people how to fish. Courses were taught. Degrees were awarded. That's true that many of these fishers sacrificed and put up with all sorts of difficulties. Some lived near the water and bore the smell of dead fish every day. Some of them were ridiculed by people who made fun of their fishing clubs and their meetings. But with all of this effort that they put into studying and learning and teaching and sending, they never actually got around to doing any fishing." The parable closes with the question, is a person really a fisher if he never fishes? Jesus said in Matthew 4, verse 19, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." If we don't fish, we can't claim to be fishers. If we don't seek, we can't claim to be seekers. If we don't rescue, we can't claim to be any good for the sake of those who are lost. Folks, we have got to be about the business of seeking lost souls. People are perishing spiritually. And it's our responsibility to rescue them. You know, anytime you undertake an important work, there are usually some tools that you can use, the correct tools for the right job are the kind of things that make the work go so much better. And if you have to do a job without having the right tool, then you really begin to develop an appreciation for tools. Do we have the right tools for rescuing the perishing? I want us to spend the rest of our time this morning noticing these three that I have picked out. And I believe these are irreplaceable for the task of rescue. We're going to be looking at the two of the three parables that Jesus taught in Luke chapter 15. If you have your Bibles, you can join me there. And first of all, we're going to look at the fact that before we can begin... If you haven't noticed, I've got a resolution problem with the screen on my computer and the screen on there, so you'll have to put everything together for yourself. But before we can go any further, before we can actually begin, we've got to have the tool of compassion. Compassion. Over and over, you'll find the New Testament writers making reference to the Lord's compassion that He had for the people of His day. And so it's no coincidence then that we read verses 1 and 2 from Luke chapter 15 where it says that all of the tax collectors and sinners were drawing near to hear Him. Him, of course, is Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." Now I want you to notice the word "receives" there. This man receives sinners. In the original language, the word "receive," the word that's translated into English "receive," could literally mean welcomes, but not just welcomes, but welcomes as friends. You know, there are many different ways that you would receive someone who comes to visit you. If, for example, it's someone who owes you a great deal of money, you might receive them in one way. And if it's someone whom you owe a great deal of money to, then your attitude is probably going to be a little bit different toward them. If it's someone who has done you wrong and you agree to see them, then you're going to receive them in a certain way. But then if it's your dear friend, you're going to receive that friend in a very welcoming way. That's the concept between or behind the method or the attitude that Jesus showed toward those sinners. He receives sinners, they said, as friends. Why did the lost people of Jesus' day seek Him out and come near Him? Well, it certainly wasn't because He had a message that tickled their ears. They didn't feel better about the way they'd been living after they listened to Him talk. It wasn't that He compromised on sin and was softer on sin than the current religious leaders of that day. Why was it that the sinners came to Jesus and felt so welcomed? The reason is that He had compassion. He had a compassionate attitude toward sinners, and it showed. I read an illustration not long ago that perfectly speaks to this point, along with some firsthand experience. If you've ever been involved in a traffic accident, particularly if it's a bad traffic accident, or even been in the general vicinity when one happened, there basically are three types of people who come to the scene. First of all, there are those who are best described as gawkers, onlookers, passers-by, those who are very curious about what's going on and what happened, no desire to help, no intention to render any kind of service, but just curiosity seekers. There also, after a certain amount of time, are the law enforcement officers who come. They have the responsibility to, in some sense, organize the scene of the accident, but primarily they're responsible for traffic control, accident investigation, determining who's at fault, and being able to issue the appropriate citation after everything is said and done. I have the greatest of respect for law enforcement officers who are able to work well in an accident scene. But then there's a third class of people. This has been brought home to me especially since Justin has worked with the fire department as a first responder. And I know Sean can back up what I'm about to tell you. The paramedics, the fire department people who respond to the scene, are basically there for one reason: to render assistance, to get people out of those twisted automobiles and wrecks, to administer whatever medical attention they need on the spot, to help to preserve their lives until they can be transported to the hospital in order to get complete medical treatment. The paramedics, they don't care who's at fault. It's not their job to try to figure out who's to blame. All they're there for is to render the assistance to those who are injured. To which group do you belong? Insofar as the spiritual work of the church is concerned, and specifically the matter of reaching lost souls, are you just a bystander? Are we just onlookers, curiosity seekers? Or do we see ourselves in the role of the policeman, trying to figure out who's in the wrong and what blame needs to be put on who? Or are we full of compassion for those who are lost and want only to help and to assist? In the second place, I would suggest to you that we need the tool of effort. I believe this is brought out in Jesus' words in verses 3 and 4 of Luke 15. Luke says, "So he told them a parable, saying, 'What man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it?'" I would remind you again of those words, "and goes after the lost one until he finds it." The shepherd did not wait for the lost sheep to wander back to the flock. He didn't leave the side gate open at the sheepfold at night so maybe the sheep would find its way back while he was asleep. No, it says that he left the 99 in the open country, and he goes and looks for the one that's lost. He put an active effort into that matter. You know, I'm afraid that many in the church today have this attitude that since we built this big, nice church building, the lost will, you know, kind of like that movie, you know, where Kevin Costner kept seeing those baseball player ghosts who said, "If you build it, they will come. If you build it, they will come." Talking about a baseball field out in the middle of a cornfield. And sure enough, he built the ball field, and what do you know? Those old long-dead baseball players came back to life and came to his field. Sure enough, if you build it, they'll come, and they did. That's the way we see the church sometimes. If we build a big, nice new church building, they'll come. Well, you know, Winn-Dixie's proven that. 7-Eleven did it for years. They'd go across the street or around the corner and build a brand new store because it was a proven fact of marketing that you get more customers into a new facility. But I'm here to tell you that that doesn't always work where it comes to spiritual matters. And if people come out of curiosity to see the inside of a new building, it's going to be very difficult to build a lasting relationship with them and to get them to build one with the Lord. As a church, we need to be active in making efforts to reach the lost. Efforts like campaigns and gospel meetings are good. Vacation Bible schools. We send out the House to House, Heart to Heart magazine every other month to hundreds of people in the communities around us, and that's good. The Mexico mission work, the Panama missions, and I'm convinced that our elders are doing, have done and are doing a good job at guiding this church in efforts like that to reach the lost. But the question is, what are we doing as individuals? Are we doing anything? Are we making any efforts to reach the lost? Are we spending a large portion of our prayers for the sake of the lost and our concern for their souls? Are we actively promoting the spread of the gospel with our own efforts and our own time? Are we trying to reach the lost with the news of Jesus, those whom we come into contact with every day? There is a third tool. In reaching the lost, and it is persistence. Persistence. Persistence is what you need to keep preaching a sermon when your graphics have gone bad. In verse 8 of Luke chapter 15, Jesus in that second parable says, "Or what woman, if she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek it diligently until she finds it?" It's not easy, usually, to reach the hearts of those who are lost. There are very few first efforts that meet with success. Persistence is absolutely essential. This persistence has to be balanced by wisdom. Sometimes it's challenging to know when to quit, when to hush, and when you've said enough. And we need to work on being able to know those things too. But in some cases, particularly with families, family members, or close friends, it may take years of persistent work to reach them. I remember the case of a couple of families who worshipped at the congregation where my dad preached when I was a teenager. The husbands of those two families were good friends and neighbors, and neither of them were Christians, even though they both attended with their wives and families at most all of the worship services. Anytime they were approached with someone wanting to talk to them about their spiritual condition, they just, very politely said, "I understand. I know what you're going to say. Right now, I'm not ready." Time rolled on, and finally, after 20-something years of persistent efforts to reach them, accompanied by the godly example of their family members, one Sunday morning, those two guys stepped out into the aisle together at the same time, responded to the invitation of the Lord, and were baptized into Christ. It was one of the happiest moments in the lives of that entire congregation. And it didn't happen without persistence on the part of everyone. We cannot reach the lost without persistence. And so basically the three tools that we have for seeking the lost: compassion, effort, persistence. It'll never work without them. Hope you'll come back tonight, because we're going to look at that third parable tonight in our study. We're going to examine the situation of those who have made shipwreck of their faith. Paul describes those people in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 18 to 20. We're going to study that text and see what the Scriptures hold us accountable for insofar as reaching the lost who have wandered away and become unfaithful. But this morning I'd like to remind you that the New Testament is abundantly clear regarding what one needs to do in order to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. To repent of sin, to confess Jesus as Lord and Master, to be baptized into Christ for the remission of sins. Perhaps you may have already done that, but have allowed sin to come back into your life and in such a way that it has pulled you away from God. Acknowledge that waywardness. Turn from that sin and ask God to forgive you.